Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 3rd of April. So many teams had their opening days yesterday, and we're going to talk baseball this hour. Our guest has said in a recent column, actually a column from spring training in Tempe, Arizona, out of 30 franchises, 26 this year can come to the regular season with a genuine belief that they could play beyond September. Franchises that don't have skyscraping budgets are putting together talented, exciting young clubs. Also, they have the economic virtue of being relatively inexpensive. Between this development and increased revenue sharing, more teams have a real shot to compete this season. And so we're going to be talking about those teams and, of course, spend some time with the Milwaukee Brewers, who gave fans in Wisconsin a terrific game yesterday. We watched it at our house every single moment of that game. Of course, I live with baseball guys. And actually, in the interest of full disclosure, our guest this hour is my husband. Isn't that weird to be interviewing your husband? Isn't that weird? We've done it before. And actually, we had this event at the museum on Sunday, and a guy who's a photographer for a Fond du Lac paper came up to me and said, "You've had your husband on before. Why don't you have him on?" So, again, talking about baseball, I thought, of course, we should have him on again. And so that's what we're doing this hour. Michael Bauman, did I say his name? He's a national columnist for MLB.com, Major League Baseball. And he's on the road during the baseball season covering a lot of teams, and had a terrific weekend, actually, with a civil rights game, which we'll talk about some during this hour. So, da-da-da-da-da. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm good. We watched, I said in the intro, every single moment of the game last night. Your son, Andrew, who is probably more of a baseball fanatic than you are. And we had to tape the game again today so we can watch every minute of today's game as well.
Actually, you should have him on the air as a guest.
He wanted He wanted to call in, but he's in biology.
Well, that takes precedence, I think.
Does it really?
I hope so.
I'm not sure about that. We wish biology did take precedence at some point. I know you weren't in Milwaukee. You've been in St. Louis watching them, but I'm sure you're aware of what happened here. It was a terrific game, you know, and the thing is about this game, you see it in the hope and the, it's 1982 again, this is the year, and they played this great game, and you almost want it to end after this. It's as good as it gets.
Well, the Brewers sort of symbolize what's happened in baseball in the last several years, which is, you know, they're a classic small market franchise. They have a small media reach compared to the New Yorks and Bostons and Los Angeleses of this world. And yet, there's a great optimism that they can become competitive. They hadn't had a winning season in 15 years. But they spent a great deal of money, $42 million on a pitcher, Jeff Suppan. And they've created quite a stir around not only in Milwaukee but around baseball. People talk about them as a young team on the rise, and that's, I think, indicative of what's been healthy about baseball recently.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the vast majority of teams have the right this year to think of themselves as potential winners. Talk more about that. They all think they can win, and they might?
Well, obviously the vast majority of them will be disappointed on
December 30th.
But at the moment, they can, and this wasn't true in the recent past. I mean, you had seven or eight teams that had the highest payrolls, and generally they would be thought of as the contenders, and everybody else would be sort of hoping to improve by magic means somehow. But this year, with the advent again of the revenue sharing, the luxury tax, and the general prosperity in the game, a lot of teams have they've really picked up the pace. And what they've done is they've returned to the old virtues in baseball, which is developing your own players through scouting and player development, which is the solid, most traditionally reasonable way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see a lot of these clubs who, again, like the Milwaukee's, have a lot of young players because they're less expensive players who they brought through their farm system. They have tremendous talent. And they're being asked probably to make a big impact much earlier in their careers than they would have been normally, but that's how people are playing now. And so there's a lot of excitement, a lot of unknowns about it.
Yeah, and a lot of that was made of yesterday's game, the speed, the quickness, that they were really on the ball, that they were taking risks, that it was a hot-shot young team, and they were giving it their all. Andrew, our son, kept saying, "Man, that's really great. The guy's giving it his all. He's working as hard as he can at this." And it was one of the joys of watching the game, that people were working very hard.
They have to. They're being paid well. They should work.
Yeah, that's right. They should be working darn.
But again, the younger players are being paid much less well than the older players, so they have that incentive. They can become wealthy as well.
Yeah, you've written that the talent has been spread around like never before in baseball. How did that happen, Michael?
Well, there's more money available to the small market franchises. There's a tremendous disparity. I wouldn't want to suggest even for a moment that there was anything like an economically level playing field in baseball. But it's more level than it once was. And so you have a franchise like Milwaukee. You can spend $42 million on a pitcher. And Kansas City yesterday spent $55 million on Gil Mesh, a pitcher. And everyone said, what are they doing? And again, he went out and beat the mighty Boston Red Sox with their hand lead in their opener. So, you know, again, that's a major difference. Those pitchers would not have been signed several years ago by those clubs because they simply would have been way beyond their reach.
Yeah. You've talked to a lot of pitchers. I was wondering this. Every time, even if I go to a Little League game and I'm watching pitchers, I'm thinking the phenomenal amount of pressure, all the eyes that are on you, how important you are to the game. What do these guys do to kind of chill before a game or to keep the pressure off themselves as they're playing?
Well, I think most of them have developed a ritual they're comfortable with. It's superstitions of a sort, but they have a game day ritual. They do the same things every day. They feel comfortable with it. Yeah, I think that's very routine. From going in the trainer's room and doing what they're doing there, and going out and warming up and playing long toss for a while, and then going out to the bullpen. It's they comfort themselves with that kind of thing. But you're right. You've touched upon it, Kathleen. You've come a long way in your knowledge of the game since we first met. And of course, you've been forced to essentially, so you have something to talk to at the dinner table. But,
I know, it's true.
But the truth is, the essence of the game is pitching, and that's where it starts. The game starts with the ball in the pitcher's hands, and that's how it happens.
Yeah. You have no idea how big a fan I'm going to be this year, Michael.
Really?
I mean, you're in it for a whole new me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Brewers.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm going to be a huge fan.
I remember several years ago when the Brewers were not so talented, and you said to Andrew, our youngest son, how can you possibly spend this much time and this much emotional energy on a team that is this bad? And he said, Mom, it's our team. I have to.
I know. Well, his enthusiasm for it is just so sweet. Lord, he loves baseball. He's going to do something related to baseball in his lifetime.
Good.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's talk a little bit about, I really liked your column about this this civil rights game that you went to on Saturday, and what you said about it. Whatever happens along the long and winding road of the 2007 season, the day before it all started again, baseball remembered the civil rights movement, its own role in that movement, and its own commitment to diversity.
What a wonderful event. And again, we're patting ourselves on the back with that, but it was a thing that should have happened years ago. And of course, this will be the 60th anniversary this April of Jackie Robinson appearing in the major leagues. And the point was being made, I think, by several people, including Bud Selig, the commissioner, that this was not only an important event for baseball, this was an important event in the history of American society. Because if you look at 1947, the armed forces were still segregated.
Yeah.
We hadn't gotten to Brown versus the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
The Voting Rights Act was 18 years away.
Mm.
And baseball, which was probably more culturally dominant than it is today because the other sports weren't what they are today, this was a major, major step. And baseball would be well to remember that, and I think they did. It was a lot of people visited the National Civil Rights Museum there.
Mm-hmm.
There were various other activities that went on, and I think it was a good thing for everyone involved, the fans, the players, the media. It was a time to ponder what this all meant and to sort of renew the commitment to diversity in the ranks of baseball. Because the one problem that baseball has is it has a tremendous growth in the number of Latin players, the number of East Asian players. The actual percentage of African-American players has declined markedly.
Why is that? You wrote that in your column, and I hadn't known that. You wrote 28% in mid-70s to about 8%, only 8% now.
Baseball does not have much of an impact in the center in the inner cities these days. It really doesn't. And you see in Milwaukee projects like the Beckham thing, which is wonderful.
Yeah, oh, that's a great league.
Yeah, it's just a terrific situation bringing inner-city kids to the game. Baseball needs to do more of it. It's begun to do some of it. But it needs to do more. And as Bud Selig said, you can't lose that part of our heritage because that baseball, that is central to what baseball is, is Jackie Robinson breaking the barrier. That is one of the game's proudest moments. And the commissioner said it is proudest and most powerful moment.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that? Do you think it was baseball's proudest and most powerful moment?
Without question.
Really?
I mean, you can talk about somebody hitting a home run, but this was something that had an impact on all of American society, and baseball stood tall at that time.
Mm-hmm. But you also wrote in the same column that the staffs in Major League Baseball, minorities are now a much larger percentage than they were some years ago.
When Bud Selig took over as commissioner, the minorities made up 2% of the front office staffs, and today they're 28.
Hmm.
So that, there have been significant gains in that area. And you need to see more, I think, African-American, Latin general managers and people of that sort. That hasn't happened yet. But there are people in the pipeline, and
I'm sure
their strides have been made there.
Yeah. I just have the feeling, and maybe it's just because I decided to become a big fan this year, but I just have the feeling that this is going to be a great year for baseball because of what you were talking about earlier, talent spread around more, there's more equity in the game. It just seems as though if you have so many teams who have a chance, it makes it much more exciting, doesn't it?
Absolutely. That is what the National Football League is built upon, the idea of parity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have, they're more highly evolved in terms of how the money is spread around because it's darn near equal. So they've done that with great success, and I don't think baseball people will acknowledge that that's their model, but that has been a howling success at the gate and on TV for the National Football League, and baseball is moving in that direction. And I also think, Kathleen, the game takes you sort of out of the modern world for a moment,
right,
which is not a bad thing,
right,
given the way the modern world appears to us.
Uh-huh.
You know, you listen to public radio, you read the newspaper, you read something online, and the news is almost all bad. And here's a game that's sort of gentle and benign in a way. I mean, yes, people get hit with pitches and they collide with each other and things of that sort, but there's this kind of geometric precision to it and an internal beauty to it that really sort of, if you go up to the ballpark, and the rest of that stuff can be left behind for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that's been my experience. And other people may not be quite as romantic about it, but a lot of us who love the game feel that it's just sort of a comfort, a solace.
Yeah. There is a lot of romanticism about this game that there isn't about a lot of other games. I mean, you got Walt Whitman making great quotes about it. You got Humphrey Bogart talking. You got all these people who are people of substance who wax poetic about baseball.
Yeah, the late Bart Giamatti, who had been commissioner, but part of that had been president of Yale University, used to say that baseball was the only freestanding American institution that had withstood the test of time since the Civil War to the present day. And if you think about it, that's absolutely correct.
That's something.
It's not an accident.
Yeah. Let's welcome phone calls. Michael Bauman is our guest this hour. If you want to talk about the Brewers in yesterday's terrific game, that would be okay. The civil rights game, the number of players of color who have entered the game now and whether or not that's reflected and will be reflected in management of the teams, why it is that baseball is losing African-American players and how to reverse that particular trend. We can talk about the civil rights game that started really this season and baseball's role in integrating American society and whether or not this was baseball's proudest moment, the great talent that you see on the... I mean, we can talk about the Brewers, too. A lot of people listening are Brewers fans, I'm sure. So if you want to discuss what you saw yesterday and what your hopes are for this team and why so many teams legitimately have hopes, we'd love to hear from you. Michael Bauman is national columnist for MLB. That's MajorLeagueBaseball.com. And he is my husband. So we're finally having... He's on the road a lot now, so there's a chance for us to talk. And we have lines open, so feel free to grab one. We'll be with you in just a moment. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking baseball. The 2007 season this hour, Michael Bauman is our guest. He is national columnist for MLB.com, and our number one line is in open if you'd like to get it, 800-486-8655. Dan is our first caller, Michael from Eau Claire. Hi, Dan.
Kathleen, I love your show, and I think highly of your husband.
Oh, gee, you're great. I'm glad you called right away.
As I was sitting here thinking, I thought to myself, geez, do you know what she ought to do this season? Is just do a 5-minute podcast every week with her son on what's going on in the Brewers organization. You could put it out on the web, and it would be easy and cheap, but that would be fun.
Oh, I'd love that. That's a good idea.
What I wanted to talk about is that as I've gotten older, I'm over 50 now, I went to college on a football scholarship. I never played any baseball, but as I've gotten older, I've become a fan, and I mean a fan of the Brewers to the point where, my gosh, how can you not watch them even if they're going to lose? But the difference between football and baseball is it's almost football's militaristic. It's the taking of property with violence. And baseball is such a benign, gentle game, like your husband said. But probably more important to it all is that it's less economically driven, too, because they have baseball games in the middle of the business afternoon when you have to take off. to listen to it. And we don't have enough of that in this country. And, you know, it's almost, you know, anti-American in its in its philosophy. But I always think of George Carlin's little deal on baseball versus football. I don't know if you guys have ever heard it, but
right.
It was wonderful. You know, the difference between it was that it was about philosophy. It was about, you know, it was a religious fervor almost about baseball. And like I said, I turned into a fan in the last 10 years, and I don't think I'm ever going to give it up. I can't watch football anymore because it's too much to watch it.
Yeah, we'll have to dig out that, Carlin, for the next comedy show.
That would be good.
Yeah.
No, that's well said, Dan. I mean, baseball is a game that really it's running counter to the current direction of American society. It's not at all territorial. You know, it's sort of intellectual in a way. I don't want to put too many pretenses on it, but it's a beautiful game, you know, and it does. When you go to the ballpark, you've just left the rest of the world behind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thanks so much for the call, Dan. Let's go next to Tom from Milwaukee. Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
This, what you said, if you covered why the decline in black players, I heard you raise a question, but why are there being less black players?
I think, this is strictly theory. A lot of the marketing that goes towards the inner cities is NBA directed. It's around shoes and apparel, and baseball hasn't done much of that. So if you know, there's Nike, there's Adidas, there's Michael Jordan, there's LeBron James, there's Carmelo. You know, it's just I think that stuff is pretty pervasive. Baseball has not aggressively gone in and marketed itself to that community, and it's beginning to do things. It's setting up inner city baseball academies in places like Compton. And but they have to be more aggressive because it's sort of lost touch with a whole generation of young kids.
Yeah, there seem to be a lot of Hispanic players.
Well, yeah, baseball has been opened up to the Latin American world in a huge way, and that really the talent pool has never been better in baseball because now it's for the first time it's really a global game, and so you have all these wonderful from the Dominican Republic alone, you could put together two All-Star teams. I mean, it's fabulous, and then now you have the Eastern Asian influence. So in that way, the talent pool is larger, but you don't want to lose touch with the base that you have in American cities.
I have one comment about the modern game and all the things you're talking about. I'm a long-time fan. I never quite recovered after the Braves left, but I don't know. I don't enjoy going so much anymore. I love the game, but it's awfully noisy. There's something going on all the time. There's a lot of drinking. I went to a restaurant last night where a lot of opening day, but a lot of young people came in where I was, and they were all drunk. And I don't know. I don't particularly enjoy the atmosphere of the game. I enjoy the game.
I think a lot of people have that sense. And also, what I would say about opening day is that's not the real crowd.
Right.
Opening day is something unto itself. And if you go out to the ballpark the second day of the season, that's more like the real people. They're going to be there all year.
And you can sit in places now where people aren't drinking, too, if you're offended by that. I tend to be offended by that as well.
Yeah, they have family sections in all the ballparks now. And I admit that, you know, there's no question that it's a recreational drinking kind of thing at any sporting event. But the people who appreciate the game are out there to appreciate the game as opposed to get loaded.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom, for your call. We go next to Mike from Rice Lake. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Hello.
Absolutely love the show.
Great.
I took two of my older kids out of school early yesterday.
Yeah.
Have done that the last few years, actually. And we drove down to Minneapolis to catch the opening day of the Minnesota Twins. We've done this for, oh, gosh, it's been quite a few years now, and my kids are even still quite small. But as we were driving down, we were listening to the pregame broadcast on WCCO, and they were talking, of course, about the death of Herb Carneal, one of the greatest commentators in the history of baseball. And his mentor had been apparently Ernie Harwell. And you were speaking of the romance of baseball. And apparently, before his first broadcast every spring, Ernie Harwell would read this from the Song of Songs from the Bible, interestingly enough. It goes, "Behold, the winter is past, and the rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The calling of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its fruit. The blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, let's play ball."
Oh.
You know, I could not imagine Madden, for example, reading that.
No, you don't get that from the NASCAR announcers either. Ernie Harwell, just a wonderful gentleman, an ambassador for the game, and for so many years. People grow up with those voices.
Oh, yeah.
On the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I know I did. You know, just Earl Gillespie and Blaine Walsh, listening to the old Milwaukee Braves.
Mm-hmm.
But every city you go to, you'll have people whose identification with the game starts with those radio voices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of, again, the romance of the game. But Ernie Harwell is a man apart, a gentleman, a scholar, and a person who would read something exactly like that that means so much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Did you have a great time, Mike?
We had a fantastic time. We sat in the family section. I heard the comments of the caller before. And unfortunately, what I found is that many of the family sections in the ballparks are not exactly in the best locations.
Mm-hmm.
The family sections in the Metrodome are down the right field line in the far corner. It was a sellout crowd, and we had tickets that were way, way up, semi-obstructed view. But it didn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were there for the game. We saw the game. It's the atmosphere. It's the the introduction of the American League Central champions, the tribute to Herb Carneal, the you know, all of that that we've been doing for, well, I said, a number of years. So
that's terrific. Anytime the kids can see Johan Santana pitch, it's an educational experience. So the school, I think, was compensated for.
As long as the grades are all right, I'm sure they are. Thanks, Mike, so much for your call. And there is something about, you've written about this really rather poetically on occasions, many occasions, Mike, I mean, you go to ball games with your dad, too, and now with your sons, and there's something about carrying generations along and generations in the same family. There's something that's really, I don't even know what word to use, but it's a test of time. When you talked about the Civil War, you think about families who have gone together to ball games, and then some of them die and new ones are born, and geez, it's life, right? It's life.
As you go from city to city, you'll have so many people that I talk to, just fans, people, other writers, whose connection to the game is generational like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of my most vivid memories of childhood are going to Milwaukee County Stadium with my dad. And, you know, that was one of the things that I look forward to as a father. Each of those kids in turn going up to the ballpark, and they're all, you know, the reaction to it is always wonderful, and you hope that eventually with their children they'll do the same thing.
Right, yeah. Let's go to Patty next from Green Bay. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Patty?
I'm good. Hey,
good.
Baseball season. That's always good. You know, and then you just brought up what I was thinking about was the generations passing baseball along. You know, there's so much baseball in our family that my dad had this myth that I believed as a small child growing up on North 34th Street that he actually tried out for the Braves.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it was a myth. It was a story, but it was a good story. And, no, you know, he fessed up. But then, you know, I passed it on to my friends. But, no, but he raised two daughters. And, you know, when the Braves left Milwaukee, that was a sad, sad time for our family, I think. I don't really remember it. But when the Brewers came and we had moved to Madison by then, we would go, you know, make the pilgrimage all the time to County Stadium. But, you know, there was a connection when you couldn't talk to your parents about anything else. You know, my sister and I could always talk to our parents about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's in Minneapolis now, and her, you know, she takes her son to Twins games. She's a single parent. But she makes sure that they go to Twins games all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we come down and we go to Brewer games. My husband is getting, you know, he's learning how to adjust to having to go to Brewer games every so often. But it transcends generations. And my son learned how to listen to baseball with my mother one summer. My mother is in her 80s, but she loves to listen to Euchre on the radio.
Yeah.
She doesn't watch it on TV. She listens to it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sit. She was here when it started, and they would sit and listen to the ball game together in the living room. And when Grandma left that week, he was about 6 or 7. He brought it on upon himself. He asked for a radio, a transistor, you know, just one of those old-fashioned transistor radios, so he could just listen to baseball. And now he does it every night.
Oh,
and you know,
great.
Yeah, that is great.
Bob Uecker echoes through our house every baseball day.
Yeah, I mean, he's a real special guy too, isn't he, Michael? He's incredibly talented.
He is one of the most genuinely funny people in the history of mankind, I think. He's like baseball's Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he says turns out to have some wit in it. It's an incredible talent. And he has become, through the lean years, people, I think, turned into those broadcasts to listen to him.
Right.
The chances were the Brewers weren't going to win.
Right.
But at some point, they would be greatly amused by Bob Uecker, who is part of the whole deal. And that's what I'm talking about. It's great.
Right.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. And he's been at this for quite some time, hasn't he? I don't know how many years, but...
Well, it's in the early 70s. I mean, yeah.
Isn't that something?
He's been the franchise.
Right. I agree with her. Maybe it's because I love radio so much. But listening to a ballgame on the radio, to me, is every bit... as wonderful, and it's probably better for your mind and imagination than watching it on television. There's just, I don't know if that comes from my childhood or my Aunt Alice or who listened on the radio, but I think it's better on the radio.
Well, you might have a slight pro-radio prejudice. I mean, I think objectively,
that's true.
I think we can say that. But,
that's true.
But there are generations of people who, you know, their baseball lives are formed around listening to their radio, and it's a game that can be easily imagined. And you hear today the famous calls, you know, like Russ Hodges in 1951, the Giants win the pennant. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that is immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. Patty, thanks so much for your call. A couple lines are open if you've been trying to get through. We're talking about the 2007 baseball season with Michael Bauman this hour. He's national columnist for MLB, MajorLeagueBaseball.com. And did I give you the number? 800-486-8655, 227-2050, if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Bob is next from Plymouth. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Great show.
Great.
Hey, I just had a quick question. I was watching the news last night, and they mentioned that this was the second year in a row, I guess, that the president wasn't available to toss out the first pitch on opening day. And I was just wondering if you might get an update on the history and if that was a true fact. Thanks. I'll take my comment.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
I'm not aware of the president's actual circumstances. I think that William Howard Taft was the first one to show up on a regular basis. But he needed two seats because he was fairly wide.
Right.
And that's part of the legend, too. I have a vivid memory of the opening of Miller Park and the current president throwing the first pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the first pitch that he threw was remarkably... It was right of the plate, which I thought was symbolically accurate. It was very far off the plate, and Davey Lopes, who was managing the Brewers at that time, made a beautiful backhanded stop to save the president, I think, significant embarrassment. And we asked Davey after the game, and he said that pitch was right down the middle. So you've got to protect the president.
Right. There was a lot in the press yesterday, as you know, Michael, about whether or not he was going to get booed significantly this year. His approval ratings aren't very high, and he was doing something else. He had some kind of meeting. But it is unusual because the guy's a very big lover of baseball, right? He was a part owner.
He was a managing director of the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
That was actually his avenue back into public life, really.
Mm-hmm. So
he is genuinely, I'm told, a real baseball fan.
Yeah. Tell me about fans. I know that baseball attendance has been up. Can you talk about what it was last year, Michael, and whether or not parks are looking forward to record-breaking attendance this year?
Yeah, it was the third straight year of record attendance. And the average attendance for a franchise of three franchises is now more than $2.5 million per year.
Hmm.
And when you consider that back during what we thought of as the golden era of baseball in the 50s, the average attendance was much closer to a million per club.
Mm-hmm.
This is astounding growth. Admittedly, it's, again, uneven. You know, there are clubs drawing 3 to 4 million people, and other clubs not drawing very well. But the average across the board is astoundingly good. And it's a measure of the game's health and a measure of the interest in it. Because those seats aren't cheap. It's cheap relative to basketball and football. But, you know, that's a significant financial commitment to keep showing up the ball game. But people do it.
Yeah. Let's go next to Ken from Belleville. Hi, Ken.
Oh, hi. It's very nice to be on the air with the two of you. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, and I was a Dodgers fan until they left. Since I couldn't root for the Yankees, I became a Milwaukee Braves fan back in the mid-50s. To such an extent that I even took the name of Matthew for my confirmation name after Eddie Matthews.
Oh, jeez!
Now, I have many, many things to talk about baseball, some good, some bad, but I'm going to choose just one thing. And that is, and you mentioned earlier about some of the announcing. It seems like when I was growing up, the announcing was was fair and accurate and educational without sticking it down our throats, and also beautifully done. I had Red Barber and Mel Allen, and they were just the top of that profession, and they did so much for people liking baseball. Well, the other day, when the Mets were playing the Cardinals in the opening night, Carlos Beltran, the center fielder for the Mets, threw a man out at the plate. A great play, and the silly announcers criticized him. I mean, what is the point? Can the guy, what, he didn't throw it in fast enough? Should he run it in? Not as good as the old days? The announcing is awful. And later in the game, the catcher who had his as baseball players call it, the meat hand behind his back so it won't get hit by a foul tip, somehow the strange play, the ball got between his legs and hit him in the hand, and they criticized him for not hiding his hand good enough. I mean, it's just awful. Baseball is the best we've got, and even if we have to criticize and get angry on every pitch, it's better than anything else.
There you go. The Beltran play was fascinating because I was in the press box in St. Louis while the play was going on, and there were people up there saying he's supposed to throw the ball to the second base there. And I'm like, wait, no, that was a great play.
Absolutely.
What he's supposed to do is make a great play. He made a great play. It wasn't the conventional play. Because they're five runs ahead and they're protecting the lead, and so you're not supposed to take a shot at the runner at the plate. The conventional wisdom just defies logic sometimes. And I grant you that. And the quality of announcing is, from franchise to franchise, certainly uneven. That would be you have to concede that.
But that was a very exciting play. And also, I've been in Wisconsin 7 years, and I'm really saddened that the Brewers are not really loved. And that really is a shame because they are I'm disappointed that Carlos Lee got away. But the Brewers really are a wonderful, wonderful franchise and team. I've kind of kept my eye on them over the decades, and I'm really happy to have them as my team. The heck with the Mets and Yankees.
Good for you. We're proud to have you.
I'm glad to be on. I hope the team gets bigger. Well, thanks so much, fellas, and it was great talking with
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Ken.
Good to talk to you.
Thanks
Bye.
For the call. To heck with the Mets and the Yankees. I like that sentiment.
There you go.
That's good. Let's go next to Mike from Kokana. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I'm nervous. One of the reasons I stopped watching baseball for a long time was because of the strikes and the lockouts
right.
in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What is the status of the player-owner relations right now?
We've got a new collective bargaining agreement through 2011. So there will be labor peace. The owners and the players are closer to being partners as opposed to opponents than they ever were before. That you touched on something there that was a real detriment to the game for years because mm-hmm. there was this constant feuding. There were 7 work stoppages. Every time there was the collective bargaining agreement expired, these people were sniping at each other in the press and insulting each other. And fans of baseball want to focus on what goes on between the white lines. And they don't want to hear the owners and the players being adversaries. And that was really that, and culminating in the 1994 strike. That drove a lot of people away from the game. Today, they have a working relationship, at least, that you know, if they're not buddies, at least they're coworkers. And so we can be assured, I think, of a period of labor management tranquility in baseball.
I'll start going to the games again.
All right.
All right. Thanks,
Mike.
Bye.
But people came back. They left the game, but they came back, Mike?
Apparently, the numbers would indicate that, yeah. There was a definite drop in attendance after that strike, and understandably so. That was a bad moment then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, people are returning to the game, I think, for one reason or another.
Yeah. Who are you looking at this year? Who's most exciting to watch?
The 26 teams that are in
the Yeah. They've got to narrow it down, buddy.
Well, the one team that made tremendous strides in the offseason, well, many teams made strides, but the most extreme strides appear to have been taken by the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, you hesitate to say that because it's been almost 100 years since they won the World
right.
Series.
Yeah, yeah.
You look foolish when you say things like that, but they improved themselves all over the lot. And so they would, and in that division, which I think is wide open with, again, the Brewers, there's not a real dominant team there. Again, the Cardinals, obviously, the defending World Series champions, but not a team that you would look at and say, whoo, what a powerhouse. Anybody could win there. So they are, I think, the team that has made the most dramatic improvements of all the teams. Although it could be argued that every single team in that division has gotten better in one way or another.
Yeah. How about my White Sox?
They have the unfortunate situation of being in the toughest division in baseball. You have them who won the championship 2 years ago, the Tigers, who won the American League pennant last year, the Minnesota Twins, who won the division 4 of 5 years, Cleveland, which was a very good ball club in 2005 and should be again this year. That is head and shoulders above any other division in terms of overall talent. And the White Sox have lost some of the pitching that they had, but they will still be right there, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Brewers, Michael? Are you excited about them this year?
Well, you know, selfishly, Kathleen, if
the
became better, I would be able to stay home more often during the season. I could go see them. My standard line is I live 4 miles away from the only ballpark in America I never get to.
Yeah.
So, I think they obviously have the base of young talent, and they've spent some money. They solidified the rotation, and I believe that this should be the first winning season since 1992.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about winning the pennant, but their hopes for being competitive should be realized.
Yeah, good. Michael Bauman is our guest. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the 2007 baseball season this hour. Michael is national columnist for MLB.com, and we have one line open. If you want to grab it, you could get it right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That's phone calls for Michael Bauman, 800-486-8655. Margaret from Madison is next. Hello, Margaret.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just talking about the history of baseball, and it's in my blood. I was brought up on baseball via my brother, and and my dad played for the Bloody Fourth Ward here in Madison. So I love baseball, and this is the kind of fan I am about baseball. When my own boys played ball, and if a team, the opposition made a good hit or catch, I'd get up and yell, "Wow, that was terrific!" And the kids would say, "Mom, that's the other team." I know, but that was a great catch. So that to me is baseball.
Absolutely.
And I miss it.
Mm.
I miss it, and I miss all the boys. Like I say, Gantner and Molly and Coop and Storm and Gorman, they were a team.
Hmm.
They loved to play ball. I know they made the dollar, but mostly they loved to play ball, and that's what it's all about. If you don't play it because you love it, get out.
Yeah. So, what do you think about the team this year? Are you hopeful, Margaret?
It looks like it could get quite a ways. I'd like to say we're going all the way, but that's wishful hoping.
But when you talk about it, it looks like they like to play ball. Didn't you see a lot of that yesterday? It looked like they wanted to play ball.
Yes. They were there to play ball. And when you bring in players from outside, and I'm not saying this for any prejudicial reason or not, instead of the hometown boys, that kind of distracts from it. If everybody wants to play ball and you let them play ball, you're going to have a team with spirit.
Hmm.
And that overrides a lot of shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Oh, that's well said. I think the allusions of those earlier Brewer teams, the 82 American League Championship, that was a special group. And again, those were people that had been there for some time, and people could identify with them. And they were kind of a blue-collar group. They were a scrappy, full-effort, wall-to-wall kind of club, and people really strongly identified with that group. It's harder today, I think, for fans in some ways because there is more movement of the players from team to team with free agency. You build up a rooting interest in somebody, and then he's
gone. Yeah,
disappears, and that's difficult. But I think again with the with the greater revenue sharing, small market teams have shown the ability to be able to retain some of their good young players. And again, I think that would help to build a fan base because it's difficult rooting for a team when, 20 to 25 guys are new from the previous year.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Margaret, so much for the call. My favorite name, Margaret.
There you go.
Yep. Let's go next to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, Bill. How are you?
Hey, it's a great show. I go back a long time in baseball, relatively to the old Whitey Ford-Billy Pierce pitching duels. I guess that's what really got me going in the high school days in the 50s. But since that time, I've kind of gotten into a parallel sport, which is women's fast pitch softball.
Ah.
And I'm wondering what the Major League Baseball owners are doing to support the women, new women's pro league in fast pitch, just like the NBA supports the women's NBA.
I don't know there's a direct connection between the major leagues and that women's championship. I'm sure they applaud it. The extent of their support for it is beyond my knowledge at this point. But they should support it in one way or another.
Well, it's a great place to build baseball fans of the future. I'm not sure that women's professional sports, that some of these are, you know, going to be as big time as the Major League men's sports for a lot of reasons, but it's a great place, and a lot of these girls really love to play the game, and they learn the basics of baseball. In fact, fast pitch softball is much more sophisticated.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a very that's a wonderful game, and they become very adept at it. There's no question about it. I there's some question about its Olympic future, and I think along with baseball, that should be a sport that continues in that venue, I would hope.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Jim from Ashland. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I got the best of both worlds. Got the Twins in the American League and the Brewers in the National. And they both are a small market, and, you know, it took the Brewers a couple of years to turn around, and they're using that, it looks like the same formula as the Twins. Your growth is in your minor leagues. But my main question, it has to do with the television rights that I heard. I couldn't follow it exactly. Something about DirecTV getting the rights to broadcast most of the games. And if you don't have DirecTV, if you're onto a cable, you won't get baseball games.
You'll still get, if you have cable up there in Ashland, you'll still get the games.
No, I have DirecTV. I want them all.
Well, you want them? Well, then you're covered.
Yeah.
That will be an issue for some people, but for the basic cable services that most people have, they don't have to worry about it. They're talking about the league-wide packages, and there's some controversy about that, but you're going to be okay. And I would just say that the Minnesota Twins are the role model for every small market franchise in baseball. What they have done, and this gentleman is absolutely correct, they have built through their system, they have been astute, they've been shrewd, they've been diligent, and they have turned out winners season after season with relatively small resources. They've used their intelligence and their work ethic to rise above that, and they are absolutely, you know, and I'm not saying this just to pander to the Minnesota fans in the audience, but they have done a tremendous job.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. Eric from Madison. Hello, Eric.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up one of my favorite points of Brewer history, and I guess Braves history as well, is the fact that George Webb's in Milwaukee gave free hamburgers away when the Brewers or the Braves won 13 games in a row. I thought that was such a neat way for a city to really support businesses to support their team. And I'm just wondering if any other cities do that in Major League Baseball.
I'm not aware of that. I think which was why George Webb was on the cutting edge at that time. People loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Justifiably
mm-hmm.
so, you know, and it was a way for them showing support for the ball club. You know, and a lot of people took advantage of that. It was probably one of the best things that George Webb did.
That's right.
Outside of every George Webb.
So are you looking forward to this year, Eric? Are you following the Brewers?
Oh, yes, definitely. I love listening to Euchre call the game on the radio. In fact, I'll watch the game on TV, but turn the volume off and listen to the radio.
Right, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, thank you very much for the program.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bonnie is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I just had to talk a little bit more about the Milwaukee Braves. I was, a kid growing up and listening to them. I had scrapbooks, and I had bought the first issue of Sports Illustrated and cut it all up because it had Eddie Matthews on it. But anyway, that would be worth something, I guess, if I had that. But I didn't hear anyone else talk about Earl Gillespie and Blaine Walsh as announcers.
Yeah, Mike did a little bit because you were up listening to them. You want to talk more about them, Michael?
Yeah, those guys, again, every franchise had its signature radio voices, and obviously the Braves came here and were an instant success story. Milwaukee became the first National League franchise to draw 2 million people in a season. Blaine Walsh, Earl Gillespie were the guys who were doing the play-by-play, and you just listened to them every night. It was a ritual. They became part of the family. And that whole time was kind of magical because the Braves came from out of nowhere and never had a losing season. The Milwaukee won a world championship.
It's got to be a difficult job because you're on the air for such a long period of time, Michael, and you have to know what you're talking about and get people to want to listen to you. It's not a very easy job, really.
There's no eraser involved either.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
With the instant replays, everybody in the world can see what happened, so you'd better be right. It's a very challenging job, and there are a lot of people who do it extremely well and others who sort of move from franchise to franchise doing it less well. But I think, you know, and we've talked about that, the magic of baseball is in that connection that you have with people, and the announcers, particularly the radio announcers, but to some extent the TV announcers too, become part of the fabric of the whole deal. They have to be sort of conduit of the game to the general fan base.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bonnie, so much for your call. We go to Brian next from Green Bay. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Michael, I wanted to ask you about, I grew up in the central Ohio in the 70s listening to, suddenly lost his name. He was a real young pitcher. I think he started at 17.
Wow.
As a color radio announcer, though. He was really wonderful. But I just also wanted to hear from you what you thought of the Cincinnati Reds for this year. Hopefully they're not one of the four again.
No, they're one of the 26.
Okay.
They got, again, some interesting young talent, and I think a lot of run-scoring potential. That's the pitching is going to be an issue there, I think, only because that is really a hitter's ballpark.
Yeah,
the new ballpark in Cincinnati. But no, I would think of them. They're again a team that you would consider to be on the rise, and legitimately so. But that is a difficult park to pitch in, and a lot of the new generation ballparks are. So the pitching has to respond to that. But they've gotten, Aaron Harang, Bronson Arroyo, those guys really came through for them this season. If you could build upon that, they're headed in the right direction.
Why would a park be a difficult park to pitch in? Pitching is pitching. What do you mean?
The dimensions are small.
Oh.
That's true in a lot of parks. The new ballpark in Philadelphia is it's like a hitter's paradise.
Really?
Yeah, the dimensions, it turns out the dimensions are smaller than what they actually said they were. Some of the pitchers went out with tape measures and discovered the walls were actually closer than they seemed. So, I don't know why that was, but I think it's because people like, the view is that people like home runs. There's obviously more to the game to that, but many of the new generation ballparks have relatively small dimensions and favor the hitters.
Yeah.
But Cincinnati being one of them. It's a nice park, lovely park. But it is kind of hitter-friendly.
Thanks, Brian, very much for your call. Okay, let's go to Joe from Racine. Hi, Joe.
Hi, this is Shoeless Joe from Racine.
All right.
Hey, Shoeless Joe.
I have to give you a Harry Carey quote
okay.
for all my Cubby fans. It goes back, 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 back. Holy cow.
There you go.
I have a question now. I see that on the Chicago Tribune that the Cubbies are for sale for $600 million.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
It doesn't include Wrigley Field. But I have a question. I don't remember the name of the singer who wrote City of Chicago that has always claimed that he is buried in Wrigley Field.
Steve Goodman.
Is he buried in Wrigley Field?
Michael? I don't know that, but he wrote The City of New Orleans.
Right.
And he also wrote Go Cubs Go.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote A Dying Cub Fan's Last Lament, which is one of the funniest songs I've ever heard. And he was one of the largest Cub fans in the history, which is saying a lot. And he, I think he died tragically of leukemia just before they won the pennant in 84.
Oh, my. Yeah.
But they still play Go Cubs Go at the ballpark there occasionally.
Thanks, Joe, so much for your call. Running short on time, about a minute left. Paul from Kenosha, hi.
Yes, in the promo to this show, I heard the quote of Humphrey Bogart, a hot dog at the ballpark is better than a steak at the
right,
Reds.
Right.
And you mentioned quotations by Walt Whitman, but I didn't hear that quotation given, and I was wondering if there was a source, an article, or a book where these quotations appear.
Yeah,
if you could give some more of them.
Okay, sure. Yeah, the Whitman quote is, I see things, great things in baseball. It's our game, the American game. It will take our people out of doors, fill them with oxygen, give them a larger physical stoicism, tend to relieve us from being a nervous, dyspeptic set, repair these losses, and be a blessing to us. It's great. Well, I just went to Google, you know, I Googled baseball quotes, and you can find a lot of them there. There are some wonderful quotes, aren't there, Michael?
Oh, the world is full of them.
Yeah. All right, kiddo. Well, did you have a good time?
Yeah, I got to say, without pandering to anybody, that your audience is tremendous. And I listen, when I'm home, I'm a regular listener, obviously, and I'm always impressed by the thoughtfulness and the direction that these people have. You are blessed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
With these are not people who are calling on a regular basis to Rush Limbaugh. This is a different part of America, and I think again today I was always struck by just how thoughtful and precise the whole thing was. So I obviously enjoyed it. I obviously enjoyed talking to you because this is our longest conversation in the last 3 weeks.
I know. I know, Michael. Well, we'll see you soon, and thank you so much, really. You're a terrific guest.
Well, I appreciate that, Kathleen.
I forget you're a great husband, but you're a terrific radio guest, too, so you got it all covered.
I'm a better guest than a husband, but, you know, who knows?
Well, you got one covered. Thanks, Michael. Michael Bauman, who is my husband, in case you wondered about that, and he's a national columnist for MLB.com. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, to John Treader for on-air production. This show repeats at 10 tonight on the Ideas Network.